We're going to be in Daniel 2 this morning, but we're going to bump into some things about stress. And the answer, or my title today is Desperate for Answers. And sometimes when stress comes on, let me stop. Has anybody in here ever not had stress? Now, just to make sure I got my, everybody understands the question, let me turn it around. Has anybody in here had stress? Yeah, I think everybody gets what I'm talking about. Everybody in here has experienced stress of some sort, some kind of desperation. Life has a way of bringing desperation, anxiety, and things like that. And I don't care what age you are, if we went to the nursery and they could talk, we'd hear, I'll tell you what's stressful. And they got their own list. And but there's different words in the stress discussion. Some, there's a word called eustress, E-U, stress. And that's good stress. And there's a certain amount of stress that's necessary to grow us. When the wind blows, it moves trees back and forth, and they found out that's good for tree growth. It stretches them out and helps them stretch their cells out. Eustress is a good stress. Like EU, it means good. So like in a eulogy, it's good words, and eustress, it's good stress. And there's things like, I got homework due, we got some responsibilities, and it just raises up that responsibility and brings a mild form of stress that says, this is good. It calls me to pay attention. It calls me to do the next right thing. So eustress, everybody has it. But then there's distress, and that's really a tougher one. That's a negative thing. That's if somebody's going to mug you, it creates a stress. The death of a loved one, it's stress. Your identity was hacked and you lost a bunch of money or whatever. It's stress. It's distressing. And sometimes we bring our own stress on ourselves. A lot of times we bring our own stress. We make these decisions and then we have to live out the consequences of those decisions, and it brings stress into our life. Sometimes it's just this society we live in. I think as Americans, I can't speak for other countries. I've spent very little time in other countries. And I think their stresses could be the same in some countries, but I think their stresses are different in other countries. We wash away a lot of our stress with insurance. Oh, I don't care if the house burns down, I have insurance. They don't have insurance in some countries. So there's different stresses in different parts of the world. But I think in America, we bring a lot of our own stress. We have no margin, no rest. We don't know how to rest. We have violated a Sabbath principle. You say, oh, you're getting back to the law. No, hang on to that word for a minute, principle. I don't know. Someday we may talk about the Sabbath, but let's talk about God rested on the seventh day. We don't do that. We have no margin. We slide everything in we can, and we jam our schedules so packed, and then we wonder why we're so stressed. We have no margin. No quiet time, no meditation, no stillness. And so stress is a very real part of our world. Some of it's self-inflicted. But that's not what this passage is about. But I wanted us to be reacquainted with the word stress before we started this. And when people are stressed, they're desperate for answers. So this passage, we're going to see how God brought stress into Nebuchadnezzar's life. He brought this stress into his life. And then we're going to see how the king, Nebuchadnezzar, brought stress into Daniel's life and all the wise people's lives and all that kind of stuff. So we're going to see about all that. In the middle of all this, I want us to think about, if we're desperate for answers, right? Title, Desperate for Answers. Where do we go for answers? Where do we go when we're stressed? And we're going to see a couple of models of it here in this passage. This passage is an accurate report of a real-time historical event. But it's not just historical. There's a lot of really valuable lessons that we can collect here. One of the toughest things about preaching through a book that, like next week, we're going to get into the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had and the prophecy of it all. And with that prophecy, what are we supposed to do? What's our takeaway? And one of the challenges is the takeaway. So we can read historically in the Bible things that happened, but we need to have some takeaway. What's that mean for me? What if I was in those shoes? What principles are there to learn? What things am I not supposed to do anymore that I am doing? What things should I be doing that I'm not doing? There's things that we can collect from the scriptures that will shape our lives and our journey of faith and our walk. And here's a couple questions that maybe you can keep in the back of your mind and we may bump into. Does God use unbelievers to accomplish his will? Does God communicate to non-believers about his plan or his plans? And so sometimes we stumble at that a little bit. I'll just go ahead and answer a little bit with this. The scriptures say in Psalms, our God has established his throne in the heavens, and his sovereignty rules over all, not just the believer. His sovereignty rules over all. Psalm 24:1 says, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Other scriptures say, I don't need your sacrifices of your goats and your sheep. He says, all the earth is mine. So this is God's world, and we're only in it. And God is always working in the lives of believers and unbelievers because it is him that orchestrates everything that's going on. Pastor Mike prayed, and God sets up kings and he takes down kings. And we're going to read that in this passage. So I want us to turn to Daniel chapter 2. We're going to cover 30 verses, but I'm going to break it up because I read through it and I timed it. It was like 6 minutes. I thought, ooh, let's do 3 minutes and I'll lose you. That's probably because I'm a slow reader. But here we go. Daniel chapter 2. Now in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him. Then the king gave the command to call the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king, and the king said to them, I've had a dream, and my spirit is anxious to know the dream. Then the Chaldeans spoke to the king in Aramaic. O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will give the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me and its interpretation, you shall be cut in pieces and your houses shall be made an ash heap. However, if you tell me the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts, rewards, and great honor. Therefore, tell me the dream and its interpretation. They answered again and said, and I can only hear the timidity in their voice. Whoa. They answered again and said, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will give its interpretation. The king answered and said, I know for certain that you would gain time because you see that my decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me, there is only one decree for you. For you have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the time is changed. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can give me its interpretation. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can tell the king's matter. Therefore, no king, lord, or ruler has ever asked such things of any magician, astrologer, or Chaldean. It is a difficult thing that the king requests, and there is no other who can tell it to the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh. For this reason, the king was angry and very furious and gave the command to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree went out, and they began killing the wise men, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. So they got that party started. He said, I will cut you into pieces. They're going to hack them up. They're going to destroy their homes. He wasn't messing around. It was like, that's some serious stress. The king's losing sleep over his stress. And all of a sudden, there's this decree that comes out and says, cut them into pieces. Everybody who's like part of this king's court, my counselors, my wise people, I'm going to clean the slate, cut them into pieces, and destroy their homes. Typically, that meant we're going to kill everybody in your family and start over. Get me some new wise men. Like, wow, that dude was messed up. Why? Because he couldn't sleep. That's an angry king. I'm losing sleep here, so fix it. He was a There was something in him that said, I don't trust you people. You people want more time. You want to do this. You want to do that. You want me to tell you my dream, and then you'll get together and concoct some story and say, oh, king, you got to believe it. He didn't trust them. Isn't that something? He did not trust his own people. You know, one of the things that shows up, this dream and the interpretation is really the featured part of the story. I didn't read the whole passage yet, but over 11 times, there's a principle in Bible study that if something's repeated and repeated and repeated and repeated, you ought to sit up and pay attention. And over 11 times it uses the word dream or dreams, and over 11 times it uses the word interpretation. Some translations say what it means. And then in the New King James, it said interpretation, what it means, what it means, what it means, what it means. And the king is obsessed with what it means. What in the world did this dream mean? It's haunting me. And he's had dreams, and I don't know. I'm assuming he couldn't sleep. He'd have a dream. He'd go back to sleep the next day, and then that dream would wake him up again. And I think that God kept that dream in front of him. And later we'll talk about the dream. But God kept that in front of him, and it haunted him. He couldn't sleep. He was just destroyed, and he had an anxious spirit, a troubled spirit, it says. So I like to ask questions for myself when I'm studying. Is it wrong to have a troubled spirit? Is it wrong? I mean, we were told, be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your request be made known unto God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will keep your hearts and minds. So is it wrong to be troubled in your spirit? If it is, Jesus failed. And Jesus never failed. But in John 13:21, it says, and after he said these things, Jesus was troubled in his spirit. So it's not wrong. It is not sin to be troubled in your spirit. But what we do with that matters. Where we go for solutions and all that. When Jesus prayed in John 17 in the Garden of Gethsemane, he was just sweating as great drops of blood, anguish. He's begging God the Father, oh, if you would just remove this cup from me. Anxiousness, troubled spirit. And what are we supposed to do with that? Take it to the Lord in prayer. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer. And that's what Jesus did. That's what Jesus modeled. So it's not wrong. It wasn't wrong for Nebuchadnezzar to be troubled in his spirit. I think God intended it that way. God wanted him to be troubled in his spirit. Sit up and pay attention. Troubles are coming. But here's the thing. Where do many go for answers when feeling desperate? They become unreasonable. Would you say the guy was unreasonable? Tell me what I dreamed. Tell me what I dreamed, and then tell me what the dream means. That's like unreasonable. That's that game where tell me what I'm thinking right now. And so nobody knows what you're thinking. Nobody knows what you had dreamed. So we see this unreasonableness, and this is where many people go when they are desperate, when they're anxious, when they're overwhelmed. Now, all of this stuff, you could fill these blanks in. There's blanks in your bulletin. You could fill them in with all kinds of things. Some people go to the doctor. Some people go to prayer. Some people go to friends. Some people go all kinds of different venues. Some people might choose to drugs and everything else to mask their desperation and their anxieties. You can fill it in with anything, but this passage, I'm going to show two models that's in the text. I don't want to go too far from the text because that's our goal. See what God's saying to us today. Unreasonable. We can act. When people have desperate moments in their life, we could say, wow, they were out of character. Was it out of character? Or did they show true character? And sometimes you can be good today and lose ground and not be as good tomorrow. And then you can be good the next day. And I believe your character is good. But our spiritual well-being and emotional well-being needs refreshed regularly. We need to be people who meditate, spend time with God. And we talked about this in our class this morning, not Sunday school answers. I'm talking about genuinely a heart for God, a heart for God. So sometimes when you see somebody or you yourself react in a real stressful situation, and everybody's like, wow, that was out of character. Character's what spills out when we get squeezed. So that's what's going on. He was unreasonable. His wise men, his magicians, they were begging him, please be reasonable. But I think Nebuchadnezzar was drunk with his own power. He was just drunk with himself. He thought he was all that. The next one is he was anxious. So he has this desperate feeling and it overwhelmed him emotionally. And that can happen. It can happen to any one of us, and I bet you it's happened to every one of us. There's an anxiety that settles in. And again, sometimes it's from decisions we've made. In this case, it was anxiety set in because Nebuchadnezzar went to his magicians and the Chaldeans and the sorcerers and those groups to solve his anxiety. That's where he went. He was overwhelmed. We can get overwhelmed with something. It takes over us. We obsess. Next thing is, it showed up in him, anger and threats. Anger and threats. Outbursts of anger and being vocal is fear leaving the body, I wrote. It screams this: I need control. When we're feeling desperate and anxious, the first thing we want to do is manage it. We want to be in control of whatever is managing us. And so Nebuchadnezzar says, I need control. Get these smart alecks in here and I'm going to tell them they got to figure it out. I'm going to control them to control my situation. And that's what some people do. Anger and threats just spill out just everywhere. Our unsettledness, though, can inflict others. Do you ever notice that? You could, everything could be fine, and then in a home, in a place of work, in a church, if somebody's unsettled, if somebody is fearful, if somebody's anxious, it spills out. Maybe it spills out with a parent who becomes a screamer, and then all of a sudden the kids feel the anxiety and the stress. Maybe the spouse feels the anxiety and the stress from the other spouse. And it just spills out. It could be at work, and the boss is under a lot of pressure. We got to have X amount of widgets done by Friday. And he really puts the squeeze on, and, hey, guys, cancel all your plans tonight. Hey, it's my anniversary. Too bad. We got to have X amount of widgets done. And then everybody's feeling the stress because he's just trying to control his stress. And that's what Nebuchadnezzar was doing. And it becomes turbulent. I believe Nebuchadnezzar really abused his power and his money. Anxiety and worry really declares our unbelief. Our unbelief can result in doing anything in our power to find peace. Sometimes we're so willing to compromise, do things unbiblically because we're just chasing peace. Nebuchadnezzar had power and money, but he didn't have any peace. I'm going to say that again. Nebuchadnezzar had all the power. He was the most powerful kingdom in the world. So therefore, he's the most powerful king. He sat on the throne that was bigger than all the world except for God, but he had no peace. He was trying to control the situation in his life, but he lost all self-control. Let's pick up in verse 14. So, Daniel 2:14. Then with counsel and wisdom, Daniel answered Arioch. Okay, so remember, they went to look for Daniel. That was where I left off, verse 13. They went to look for Daniel and the boys. Everybody, come on, we're going to go ahead and shred you. Daniel answered Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree from the king so urgent? Then Arioch made the decision known to Daniel. Let him know, hey, this is what's going on. And so Daniel went in, verse 16, and asked the king to give him time. Isn't it interesting that the last guys went in and asked for time? So I don't know how Daniel approached the king, but evidently it was different than the Chaldeans who went in and said, could we have more time? So the king already must have, God touched him and just gave him that trust to let Daniel give a little more time, that he might tell the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house and made the decision known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they might seek mercies from God of heaven, from the God of heaven, concerning this secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. So Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank you and praise you, O God of my fathers. You have given me wisdom and might and have now made known to me what we asked of you. For you have made known to us the king's demand. Therefore, Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus to him, do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me before the king, and I will tell the king the interpretation. Then Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king and said thus to him, I have found a man of the captives of Judah who will make known to the king the interpretation. The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation? Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king has demanded, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers cannot declare to the king, but there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the vision of your head upon your bed were these. As for you, O king, thoughts came to your mind while on your bed about what would come to pass after this, and he has revealed secrets, and he who has revealed secrets has made known to you what will be. But as for me, the secret has not been revealed to me because I have more wisdom than anyone living, but for our sakes who make known the interpretation to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your heart. So enter stage left, Daniel, God's appointed man for the hour. Daniel shows up. So I can't help but ask the question, where a few go for answers when feeling desperate. Most people in this world are not saved. Broad is the path to destruction, narrow is the way. So we know that from the Bible. If you polled everybody in the United States, what is it, 300 and some million, the majority of people in the United States would say they're Christian. Not as many today would say they're Christian as they did 50 years ago, but the majority of the people would say we're Christians on the virtue that they're Americans, maybe, on the virtue that they're good, on the virtue of they believe in a God somewhere. But narrow is the path. So where do a few go for answers? Not the masses. A few go, as we see in Daniel, to a fellowship. To a fellowship of believing friends. In verse 17, then Daniel went to his house and made the decision known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Isn't it interesting that the king, when he was under stress, went to four people. And the king went to the Chaldeans, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the wise men. I forget exactly the language for each one of them, but there's four. The king went to four people. I need answers. Daniel went to three godly men, and then the next step, he went to God in prayer. He went to four, three, and one. And That was where he went. He said, let's pray, basically. He's in verse 18, that they might seek mercies from the God of heaven concerning the secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men in Babylon. It was already going on. It wasn't just an idle threat. It said, started killing them. He already started having them killed. It was already being done. They knew the seriousness of it. So Daniel approached his friends, and together they approached God. We did that this morning. Pastor Mike stood right here, said, we need prayer for our nation, for our president. He prayed for our vice president. That's what we do. That's what we're supposed to do. Most churches would say prayer is valuable. But not everybody understands that prayer is essential. Jesus said, without me, you can do nothing. John 15:5, for without me, you can do nothing. So how are we going to access all this power? Only in prayer. Prayer is the work. We can do everything in our power, and it might even make what looks like a difference, but it's not going to be a lasting difference until God gets involved. And the only way we can get God involved is if we go and beg God to get involved. And in Daniel's case, please rescue us. We're getting ready to be torn limb from limb. Psalm 34:4 says, I sought the Lord, and he heard me, and he delivered me from all my fears. Fear is not necessarily a sin, because every one of us has, God built into us a mechanism that sits on top of our kidneys, our adrenals, and he built that in there so if an emergency comes up, your adrenals kick in, and it gives us an energy in the flesh to do certain things. But God gave us something way better than adrenal glands. He gave us access to the throne. Hebrews, therefore come boldly to the throne of grace. We have a high priest. We can go right to the throne. And that is the nature of all this. He can remove all of our fears, all of our anxieties. Daniel had no authority and no money. Remember, he was brought in as captivity. He's a slave. He has nothing. No power, no authority, no money. But he had peace because he knew God. He and his buddies went to prayer, and he was able to rest. I love, and you do too, Psalm 46:10, be still and know that I am God. That's one of the hardest things to do when there's a crisis. Be still. And the last thing we do typically is pray, right? You know, you've heard that story. Oh, so-and-so had cancer, and we went to this hospital, and then we went to that, and we went to a specialist, and we went here, and we did that, and we tried this. And the doctor said, there's nothing left to do. So we go home. There's nothing left to do but pray. Like it's the consolation. Like, see ya. You're going to die. Because prayer is all the hope we have. No, prayer should be our first go-to. Prayer should be our first go-to and our second go-to. And it doesn't mean you don't go to the doctors. I'm praying while you're driving to the doctors. That's not a bad thing to go to the doctors. But prayer is not the consolation in the end. Prayer is the part for the whole journey. It's how we stay in touch with our Father who wants us to learn and wants to hear from us. One thing I want to do, I'm just going to pull these things out. Daniel's behavior. So I want to learn from this passage, not just walk away with a historical report. So I'm going to give us some things that Daniel's behavior during this crisis, if you may. And sometimes you can even call it a crisis of faith. Like, oh man, this is not going to be good. And so his behavior really modeled well that of somebody of strong faith. Number one, in verse 14, he operated with godly wisdom and discretion. In the New King James, it says, then with counsel and wisdom. I think the NLT says He operated with wisdom and discretion. Where do we get that? We pray. We pray for it. James 1:5 says, if anybody lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. Let him ask in faith. So Daniel got his wisdom from God, and we'll find out in another verse here in a minute. He acknowledges that. Verse 16, we go to the source. He went to the king. Daniel went right to the guy who was in charge of killing him. Hey, you, the one that's going to get ready to shred me and limb to limb, can I go talk to the king first before you shred me? Sure, come on. So God, I believe, spoke to Arioch and let him know, give this guy a pass for a minute and let him go talk to the king. He goes to the king. He went right to the source. What do we do when we have anxious moments that somebody else causes trouble in our life? Because Daniel didn't cause this trouble in his life. This was somebody else caused trouble, anxiety in his life. It was the king. What do? We complain about him. We clamor about him. We do anything but go to the source. Daniel went to the source. Have courage. Go to the source. Another thing. We can share our concerns with faithful friends. First thing he did, ran home. Hey, faithful friends, we got some praying to do. He says, here's what's going to happen. And there's a real camaraderie there. God intended for people to live in community. That's his design from the get-go. Verse 18. That we can go and ask God to spare us. Pray. That's what that is. It's not real hard. It's a four-letter word. It's a good four-letter word. Just pray. Next one. He offered much praise about God. We should offer much praise about God. He went through all kinds of things praising God. In verse 20, he talked about God's eternality, his omniscience, and his omnipotence. Verse 21, he talked about his sovereignty and his gifts, the gifts that he gives. In verse 22, he talked about his revelation, that he gives gifts, he gives revelations, he gives his knowing, he gives knowledge. So he praised God from 19 to 22 in those verses there. And then all of a sudden it changed. And he praised God horizontally. And then all of a sudden it changed. And he said, not he anymore, third person, but he's praising God vertically to God. Because before that, he said, he reveals, he knows, he does this, he does that. But verse 23, I'll read it. I thank you and praise you, O God of my fathers. You have given me wisdom and might, and now have made known to me what we asked of you, for you have made known to us the king's demands. So his first reaction after his prayer was answered in the night vision was he was just spreading horizontally and telling her, God is awesome. God told me everything we needed to know about all this. He gives power. God is sovereign. God is all-powerful. God is all-knowing. And he kept praising God horizontally. And all of a sudden, he just pauses and says, God, you're awesome. You heard my prayer. You answered me. You gave us the information we needed to spare our lives, but so the king will have what he needs. Thank you. That's how Daniel operated. This is his behavior as a godly man. Verse 24, he was concerned for the lives of others. How many times do we get out of a situation or life and then we never look back? But Daniel in verse 24 says, therefore Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and thus said to him, do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. He didn't say, please don't kill the four of us. These people believed in other gods. These people were not necessarily Israeli God friendly. These people just killed their parents a year or two before this. These people destroyed their city. He says, please don't kill them. He had compassion. He saw outside of himself. Next one is in verse 27. In verse 27, he says, Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king has demanded, the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers cannot declare to the king. But there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. He declared, it is the God of heaven. I got the wrong number on there. That's to be 28. He declared the God of heaven, which really, he remained humble. And we're going to find out next week what the king does and reacts and how he is with all this. But Daniel remained humble. He didn't take the credit. He didn't walk back and forth in front of the king. I got this. You should have come to me to start with. I got this. No, he immediately said, God's got this. This is a God thing. He remained humble. All those little behavioral patterns, I'm sure if we'd observed and observed, we could dig more out. But at first glance, I don't know how many that was, 8 or 10, or there's a lot of things that spilled out of Daniel's behavior because of his faith. Because of his faith. Not just strong faith, but his faith in a God who can be trusted. Our view of God determines how we function. And for the most part, if there's no stress in life, we don't think about it. We just do life. But when stress shows up, all of a sudden our faith is called and our faith is revealed. A believer should see God in everything. Whether it's your city burned down and you're taken into captivity, whether it's a hostile king who came off the tracks and he's going to kill everybody, whether it's a sick child, whether it's a financial problem, whether it's a marriage problem, no matter what it is, a believer should see that God's finger is on the pulse of everything that's going on in your life. God is not sloppy. I think about our farmers right now. Our farmers have every reason to be washed over with anxiety, no pun intended, with washed over. They can't plant. They're desperate. And I'm begging God in behalf of our farmers. They're feeling it. But life just does that. But as believers, we can see that God's got his finger on the pulse of everything. Our behavior in desperation declares our level of belief in God. My question this morning for you, rhetorical, you walk away with it. Is God sovereign? Is God sovereign? Of course he is. What does my behavior say about my faith? For an unbeliever, his only hope is himself. An unbeliever manifests this by anger and threats and being unreasonable. For a believer, stress shows his faith, and his faith is seen in wisdom applied, community, and prayer. Let me pray with you. And then we'll transition to the table if our men will get ready. Father, I thank you for being a sovereign God, being a faithful God. We're a desperate people. Sometimes we only focus on our physical desperation, money, relationships, health, weather, whatever. We focus a lot on the visible. But Lord, I think so many times we're spiritually desperate. So I come to you, and I beg you, Lord, to first of all solve our spiritual dilemma. Increase our faith. Increase our love for you. Help us to have behavior that spills out.